When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the Beckler and Shauna podcast, your daily download of X92.9's X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
It's Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. I'm Beckler.
I'm Shauna.
It's going to be a long podcast today because it's career day.
Long pisser.
We have an interview at the end of this podcast with a guy who played baseball growing up. He was drafted by the San Francisco Giants, made it to the minor leagues, never played in the majors, but is now the general manager of the Okotoks Dogs.
Yeah.
And is also an associate scout for the Milwaukee Brewers. So how can you make a career out of a sport you love like baseball? Well, maybe you can do it like this guy. His name's Tyler Holick, and you'll hear our conversation with him for career day at the end of the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's piss and rain here, and it has been for a while.
I know. It's very, very rare that we get socked in rain like this. This is very Ontarian.
Yeah, already this spring we've had like a week of rain.
I know. Again, it's great for the farmers because that hopefully helps with the drought.
Yep.
Although, unfortunately, I also learned that in parts of the province it's going to be too much rain. So
of
then
course.
It's not going to saturate. Where, right? Like,
come
that's
on.
Always how it works. Like, just, yeah. Anyway,
Bo has had 3 baseball games so far this season. All 3 of them rained out.
I know.
So he has not played a baseball game, and he was pretty bummed about that. But on the plus side, this should help with the wildfire situation with the drought conditions.
Yeah. It's funny because our slow pitch team, same thing. First game was supposed to be last week, got snowed out. this week, getting rained out.
Yep.
So,
yep. Mm-hmm. There's nice weather on the way, though.
There is.
And this will be make everything real nice and clean and green. So. Yeah. On the show today, we're going to talk about a problem Shauna's friend is having with her roommate. We're talking about the farmers. It is seeding season right now. We'll make that sexy.
Yep.
A professional party starter. That's a job, too. An etymology. A Terry of the Month nominee. Working with your partner. Could you do it with your romantic partner? Could you work with them directly? An instrument I didn't know existed. We'll talk about handshakes and heart rate monitors after your out-of-context clip.
I like long walks on the beach. A bit of a faller.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I was reading about how the Olympics this year are planning to put heart rates on the parents of the athletes, heart rate monitors, rather, mm-hmm. to, see their heart
really?
Rates so that you can live see them while the events are happening.
I wonder if they won't be higher than the athletes themselves.
I guaranteed they would be. Yes. And I was like, that's awesome. I would love to see more of that.
Yeah,
for sure. Like,
that's pretty cool. I mean, because as a parent, you get so nervous watching your kid play.
Oh, my God, yeah.
A friend of the show, her daughter is going to Paris for the Olympics.
Oh, that's amazing.
I was like, what a cool experience that's going to be. But I'm sure she'll also be like nervous the whole time. Right?
Yeah. As a parent, you would definitely have heart rates that are more so than the athletes. It's crazy because like a lot of the athletes have wearables already where it shows their heart rate and stuff. And I was like, it would be cool to see that. Even like NHL games, to see the heart rates of athletes live would be really cool.
To see like where it's spiking and how they're recovering in between shifts.
That's it. And like as, you know, an athlete approaches another, let's say they get into a little bit of a scrap or you're chirping each other. Does the heart rate go up a little bit? Is that kind of stuff goes on?
Who's calm? Who's not?
Yeah.
I wonder if they wouldn't share that information for that reason.
I'm sure they wouldn't. But if you can you imagine the ratings?
That'd be cool.
Like, I was thinking even if you were to do that for a show, like, let's say The Bachelor, you could have the heart rates displayed. Mm-hmm. And, like, as people are, you know, interacting that way, all that stuff. Like, I love that. And I feel like everybody else would, too.
I love my Fitbit data. I like looking back on it and, trying to figure out what I was doing and stuff.
Totally.
This is kind of related. My dad told me a really funny story yesterday. So he's a retired police officer. And he was telling me this story about a guy that he worked with. And this guy was their polygraph Why don't we call him polygraph
the
guy?
Lie detector dude, yeah.
The lie detector dude, yeah. And he said he was working with the polygraph guy was working with another police officer years ago, and the other guy started to feel kind of sick throughout their shift. And then as they were going to the station, he actually collapsed.
Oh, geez.
So he's like, okay, I'm taking you to the hospital. So they go to the hospital, and the police officer who's feeling sick is in the hospital bed, and he's hooked up to all those monitors for the heart rate and everything, your oxygen, his wife was there too. And the polygraph guy was like, watch this. And he said to the police officer in the bed, have you ever had any impure thoughts about your wife's sister?
Oh my God.
And all the numbers just started shooting up. His wife's standing right there.
Holy crap. That is phenomenal.
He didn't say anything, but the data said it all.
I can't believe I've never thought to do that with people hooked up to heart rate monitors in the hospital.
And only a polygraph guy would think of that, I think.
Oh, that is so funny.
And I know there's all kinds of issues with polygraph and their accuracy and how they're used in court and stuff. I know there's big issues with that. But yep. I was like, that's a pretty pretty funny use of the technology, isn't it?
I'm going to be doing that.
Oh, if anyone's ever in the hospital.
Yeah. Like even last time, I remember when I went in, I broke my wrist or whatever, or my leg, or I don't know why I was in the hospital. But they do the, preemptive to get you in, and they check all your vitals and stuff. Even at that moment. I had a friend with me at the time. I was like, if that ever is reversed, I will do that. As long as it's not too serious.
Yeah, obviously. Like, but
absolutely.
You ever thought about me naked?
Yeah. Bleep, bleep, bleep,
bleep, bleep, bleep. Ah, I see.
They're recording your heart rate. Oh, my. The Beckler and Shauna podcast. Is a firm handshake still a thing we look for, Beckler? Like, that's what you used to do to show, that you're a confident man. You'd go and you do business and stuff, and you'd make sure that you have that firm handshake. Not a wet noodle, but a big firm one.
Right.
Is that still a thing, or?
I still really like a firm handshake. Okay. I try to deliver a firm handshake, but I could tell you this. The fist bump and the cool guy handshake have really disrupted the handshake world.
Yeah.
To the point that I'm now awkward about it. When I go for my regular traditional handshake, 50% of the time, the other party goes for a fist bump or a cool guy handshake.
Wow.
And it ends up being a very awkward exchange.
Yeah.
And I really wish that we hadn't complicated things like that.
No,
but we
should just have one standard handshake. I actually was reading a tip on how to have the best handshake, and it says this. It's not about squeezing firmly. It's about making sure the webbing between your thumb and forefinger is pressed against theirs.
The webbing. Oh, okay.
The webbing. Yeah. So you're supposed to, that's where you're supposed to kind of.
Like your hands are scissoring almost.
Yeah, you're scissoring your hands, right? And that's where the firmness is supposed to go. When I was reading this, though, I was like, what kind of.
Tribidism is the official term for scissoring. Did you know that?
Right, I didn't know
tribidism
that.
Of the hands.
Okay, good. So that's what you're doing?
Yeah.
And I was reading this and I was just like, this is just another really strange custom we have, hey? Like, all right, this is what you got to do. Like if somebody were to come to Earth and you're explaining, right, this is what you do to finish that business. You seal the deal. You jam that webbing into one another. Your hand web, you just push that in there and that seals the deal.
Firm.
Strange.
But not too firm.
Not too firm. You don't want to hurt the webbing of the innards of the scissoring of the hands.
And if you shake too hard, then it seems like you're trying too hard.
Yeah, it does.
It's got to be strong.
Yeah, okay.
But casual.
Well, so you're not really answering my question. It's kind of like half still important, but half not. And you got to make sure your webbing's firm. Okay, everybody, scissor your hands.
To me, I would say it's important, but I'm slightly old fashioned like that. So fair. I don't know if.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it hand scissoring.
Pay attention to the hand scissoring. You can call it a little scared if you just.
Yep.
Wow.
That's it. That's what you want to do. Just even more. Yep.
Those are my hands scissoring.
That's a scissoring hands there.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
You know the annoying plastic recorders that every kid learns how to play in grade school?
Yep. Sure do.
My kids haven't got there yet.
Good.
I'm kind of half looking forward to it because I want to learn how to play the Lord of the Rings theme when they do bring it home.
Oh my God.
You're going to try that
and then it's going to sound like ass and then you're going to have to put it away. But anyway.
So I didn't know this. You might have known this, Shauna, because you played in orchestras and stuff growing up, but I just learned that there are different sizes of recorders.
I feel like I vaguely heard that, which is insane to me.
So the one that kids usually play in school is an alto.
Yeah. The most annoying one.
The most annoying one. Yeah. And that's the one that sounds like this, right? But there are all different sizes. So here they are getting progressively lower. That one's not as annoying.
Slightly less.
Sounds like a Renaissance fair.
Mm-hmm.
Lower still. That actually has quite a nice turn, doesn't it?
Yeah. Again, if you know how to play them, though, that's the thing. The recorder is that...
You're not just blowing into them?
Nope. Nope. Yeah, they can still all sound awful. Anyway, that's... I didn't know that there was more sizes of recorders.
Maybe Hot Cross Bun sounds just as bad with any size of recorder. And it's also funny to look at these because they look like recorders just getting bigger and bigger. So here's a bass recorder.
Oh, yes.
That's cool, hey?
I'm sorry. No matter what size recorder you're playing, it's not cool.
You don't think that sounds good?
It sounds better than the alto ones. Yeah, for sure. Still, though, it's a recorder.
So then there's a big dog. There's a contrabass recorder. And I saw a video
Who's
of this.
Playing these, by the way?
Well, that's a good question. I saw a video on TikTok. That's where I learned about this. And the guy had a 3D printed one because he said the real wood ones are $10,000.
Who's investing $10,000 in a giant-ass recorder? Seriously.
$10,000 for a recorder. No, you don't get it. It's a contrabass recorder.
I've never seen a recorder in an orchestra before. Like, what are you doing with this thing?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. So the woman who's playing it in this video, it's way bigger than her. Okay. Like, it almost doesn't fit in her apartment.
That's
it's
the dumbest
so
thing I've ever heard.
But this is what it sounds like. Tell me that's not a nice sound. That's a $10,000 contrabass recorder.
But
right
this
there,
is
Sean.
Just again, what are you doing with that? Like you're spending $10,000 on a giant recorder to what play by yourself in your house?
Yeah,
maybe. So you can bring friends over and be like, "Can I please perform on my double bass recorder for you?" And I'd be like, "What?
Like, do you want to pick a different instrument, maybe? If you're going to be spending $10,000 on it?
What are you doing
maybe
with
pick
that?
Pick something else."
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I have a few friends who work with their partners, Beckler. And I have to be honest, I don't think I could do it.
No?
I don't think I could.
No?
Spending every single moment with your partner. Because when you go to work, that's the one time that your partner, and even if you have weird hours or whatever, there are times where you are then apart, right? Brief times, but times where you're apart. Having to do everything together with your, I don't know if I could do it.
Really? I think I could.
Really?
Yeah. I could, I could hang out with McKenna all day, I think.
Mm.
Maybe, I mean, you probably want to have a bit of time apart.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we really miss each other when we go to work. We're gross in love, though.
That's really
We're gross,
gross
about it. We're really gross.
Yeah. Well, that's adorable.
So, I could definitely, I could work with her.
I feel like there's got to be, I would need some time apart.
Yeah, you'd have to have your own time carved out. And is it your friends that work with their partner?
Yeah. That's,
do they have a way to get some space?
There's been a learning curve, apparently, for that kind of thing. Because, you just start to... When you're spending every single waking moment together, it's like, okay, you need a little bit of time to unwind and do your own thing, or else you kind of just start taking things out on each other, I find a little.
Okay.
So that's what they were saying, is that they've found ways to like make sure they have time to do things apart too. But I don't know. It seems like that's a lot of time to spend together.
McKenna's like the one person that I don't really get tired of spending a lot of time with.
Oh, that's just beautiful.
Yeah, but like I said, we're gross about it.
Yeah, that's gross.
There's a show on Netflix. It's a Canadian show called Kids Ruin Everything.
Yeah.
Really funny.
Oh, I haven't watched the show yet.
Yeah, my
that.
Boys love it. But there's two characters, an older couple, that are so in love that they joke that they wake up at the same time smiling at each other.
Oh, God. That's you guys?
Pretty much.
I'm about to vomit, so
pretty
okay.
Much,
yeah. I regret bringing this up.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
There are so many people in our industry that wind up working with their partners, their on-air partners, like, or start dating other people. It's crazy.
I think it usually happens that way.
Yeah.
They start working together,
and then they start dating. Get a dig in it. Which I, dear God, I was like, I could never, that sounds like just, you're asking for trouble. Like, you know what? I don't understand that. I mean, I get it. You spend time together, obviously.
Yep.
But why would you want to jeopardize your entire work?
Yeah, because if you break up, what happens to the show?
That's it.
It'd be very difficult to keep that show going, especially if it was an ugly breakup.
Yes. There's one girl in the industry who's dated like three of her on-air partners. And I'm like, is that all you date now? It's just like, I only date on-air partners. That's it.
There are other people out there.
Yeah.
Who don't work. Yeah, but you're right. And there are so many people I know who are either like open about their relationship on the air or they pretend that they're not dating.
Yep.
Lots and lots of people.
Lots of that too.
Lots of shows.
Yeah.
Now you're probably wondering which shows are romantically involved.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah, that'd be tough.
Yeah.
No. I mean, maybe even more so in a creative industry like this.
I know. I feel like you need to have some time apart as well, you know?
Yeah, and like, just, you probably don't want to, but imagine if we were dating, Shauna. And like, everything that we would come and talk about would be like things that had happened to both of us. We wouldn't have a unique perspective on that.
Well, it's funny because I was chatting with some of your friends you were out with Fear Fest with.
Yeah.
And one of them was like, you never come and like hang out and party with us. Like what? And it was so funny because you and I used to hang out more together and then we would wind up with the same stuff on the show. And it's not that that's not why I'm not hanging out with these guys, but it's also like, it is good to have our own separate friend groups and stuff as well as our friend groups together, because otherwise we truly would. We'd be at the same parties, be doing the same things all the time. So imagine being a partner with that person.
Yeah.
And then there'd be stuff that would be off limits because it would be like, no, we can't talk about that. Like, because they'd be have their own personal stuff going on.
You're right. And it would be like,
how.
You know, it's even, I've heard a few shows where it's a little uncomfortable to listen to. Because you know that they're romantically involved. So it's like, what was the one I was listening to where they were talking about a movie that was coming out? And they're like, oh, that looks good. Yeah, we should go see that this weekend. Yeah, we should see that.
Yeah,
and I was like, and then we're going to kiss a little.
Yeah. Then we're going to neck.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
Then we're going to
I'm in your bedroom now and I don't like this.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be. Speaking of bedrooms.
Speaking of bedrooms where you won't know what's going on.
Yeah.
That's a Shane Holmes parent home bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
You share a wall with your neighbors. Wouldn't hear them.
Yeah.
They build their homes with next level soundproofing. You can do the yell test and try it out yourself. Stand on one side of the duplex. Make all kinds of noises. See if they hear it on the other side. They won't.
No.
They won't.
They will not.
Learn more about Shane Holmes, these paired homes, and where they build them on their website at shaneholmes.com.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast. Friend of the show, and I can't remember who. I'm so sorry, but they submitted a Terry of the Month for us, Beckler. They sent a photo of a wedding where by the bar was a dish full of single cigarettes.
Okay, yes, I saw this too. A few friends of the show sent this to me.
Which is just delightful.
Yeah, just a bowl of loose cigs, hey?
A bowl of loose cigarettes. You know, it's hilarious because no one really smokes anymore, or much fewer people smoke.
Yeah.
People will vape, but you don't really see too many people darden. But then the minute somebody has cigarettes, it's like everybody kind of comes out of the curtains and goes, hello, could I please have one of those? I saw that firsthand on the weekend. I was at a friend's place and she was out having a cigarette and I was out chatting with her, and seven people in the short amount of time that her and I were chatting came out, and at one point were like, do you have an extra one of those by chance?
Yeah, because nobody wants to buy a pack.
No.
Because then they'll smoke the whole thing.
Yes.
And because a pack these days is like over $20.
Yes.
But if one person has a pack, everybody will bum off that person.
Like, people just appear out of the bushes. They're like, may I have a cigarette as well?
I haven't had one in a while.
Seriously. So at a wedding, when everybody's drinking, especially, because that's, again, when people all of a sudden smoke, or you go like walk down 17th Avenue, right? And no one will be smoking. And then people start to have the drinks. And then everybody's out trying to ask for darts for the one person who is smoking out along. It's hilarious how that works.
And I have some friends who they'll bring a pack out and they'll be like, please smoke all of these because I don't want to take them home.
That's
like,
they're
just to share for tonight.
Yeah, here you go. So this is kind of the Terry version of that. It is a bowl of loose darts. And I was like, those will get smoked 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Real Terry maneuver, like, doesn't overly look classy at a wedding, but everyone will appreciate the hell out of
it. Yeah, because there's going to be people standing up there.
Absolutely,
I've almost kicked that, Shauna, that like desire to have a dart when you drink.
Yeah.
Because I loved drinking darts for the longest time.
It's the thing that goes together best.
Yep. But I haven't had a dart since Halloween, and the last one made me feel sick, so I haven't had that, like,
good.
Even when I've had a few drinks, I haven't had that, like, desire for a cigarette. It's almost gone.
Yeah.
But
there
you're right.
Go. But it
comes out for a lot of people, especially at a wedding.
It pops out,
And I mean, a wedding provides toiletries and, like, the candy bar, and I've even seen weddings that have, like, cheap flip-flops that women can change into if their feet are sore later in the night and they want to dance.
Yes.
Why not loose cigs too, right?
Yeah, little loose ciggy.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Yesterday we were talking about what a Law and Order show set in rural Alberta would look like.
Yeah.
And we mentioned trespassing. Trespassing is a huge deal to people who live rurally,
huge.
Hey?
Huge deal. Yeah. There's all kinds of signs on everybody's property, and you constantly see, like, everyone's constantly trying to say, stay off my friggin' land.
And I sort of get it, because I think many people who live way out in the country, they feel like they're kind of on their own out there. So when someone comes on their land, they sort of take it as a threat.
Yes. And I think it happens a lot. And people will, like, dump garbage and stuff on people's land. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's not cool. People sometimes forget, I think, that when you see a big chunk of land, just because there's not a house right on it doesn't mean that it's not owned by somebody.
But someone's looking after it.
Right.
I mean, some people are real intense about it, though, right? Like, like you said, some of those signs are a little intimidating when you go out there.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about the word trespass, Shauna.
Yeah.
Etymology with Shauna.
It's a bit of an unusual word.
Yeah.
Trespass. I mean, it appears in legal terms, but it's also in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's in the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
Where does the term trespass come from?
It's super simple.
Is it?
Trepas. It's from French, right? So tre meaning like over or above, and passé, right? Just means passing or stepping in that vein. So it essentially means overstepping.
Oh.
And then it translates into, as you can see, why that would be not what you want to do. You're overstepping, you're on my land, you're to get the frig out.
And then we just went and pronounced it full Sasky?
Yes.
Trepas? You mean trespass?
Yeah. Trespass.
Trespass.
It's trespassing.
Etymology with Shauna. The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Someone mentioned being a party starter yesterday. So somebody who's hired to get the party going, and I always kind of forget that this is actually a job, but it is. And there are all types of people who do this kind of thing. Like, what's the t-shirt guy's name? Do you know the guy I'm talking about who goes to like sporting events and wears a bunch of t-shirts and throws them in the crowd?
He's like a super fan, right? Like one of these super fans the teams will bring in to hype up the crowd.
But he's essentially a party starter.
Yeah,
he's
I guess so.
A different type, because that's his job, is to go in and get people hyped up. And then there are people who are party starters that are hired by bars and events. And the crazy.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think I knew this.
Yes. And this is what's crazy, is that most of the time it's somebody who is blending into the crowd, but people will hire in like this person to kind of get dancing, to get people going, like discreetly to get these parties going. And I don't
know how undercover professional partiers.
Honestly, undercover professional partiers. Like even somebody like FUBAR, what's his name? Terry from FUBAR or whatever. Like he kind of unofficially does that same type of thing. He'll come in and he'll be at the event, and then, you know, he'll chug a beer in the crowd or do something to get people going.
Okay.
But there are people who do that kind of stuff, and they're a little more discreet about it, and they're there to keep things going.
I never thought about that.
No.
I wonder if I've ever been drawn into a party by a professional.
Probably. I'm going to Vegas next week, and I always wonder when I'm in Vegas how many of those people are hired to do that, because there's so much money that goes into so many events and so many bars and everything. Everywhere you go, there's a party going on. And
right.
I'm like, I wonder how many are undercover partiers and how many are legitimately just people wasted.
Well, and in Vegas, I'm sure it's as simple as even like paying good looking women to be there.
Absolutely.
Right?
But
The closest I can think to this is when I worked for another radio station one time, and we threw this, it was supposed to be a big party, but it didn't sell very well.
Yeah.
And like there were going to be bands playing and stuff. And we got there and it was like kind of half empty. I was like, uh-oh. This has the feeling that it could bomb. But the opener was Cardinal Official.
Oh, yeah.
And that man can get a party started. Like even in this like half empty room.
That's hilarious.
By the end of his set, people were fully into it, dancing, having a great time, drinking. Yeah, I was like, okay, well, he's a professional party starter. He's a hype man, right?
It's funny because even a few friends who organize events and stuff for like year-end parties or whatever, and they'll be like, what kind of band should you bring in? And I'm like, well, you need the party band, right? Like,
there
are certain events where like you just got to find the party band. You don't want a mellow band. You need a part.
It's not about how good they are at that point, right?
No, no, no.
It's about the energy that they bring.
Absolutely. If they chug beer on stage, if they jump around, like that's the band you want.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Well, it's seeding season, Beckler.
For the farmers.
Farmers. Busy seeding. I know it's a lot of work, but it's well underway in big parts of Alberta, apparently, which is good because I know sometimes it gets delayed and stuff. So that's all. But for those who are busy doing all the seeding, the farmers and their families, it's kind of a hectic time of year, right?
Yeah, busy now and then busy in the fall for harvest.
Yeah, really busy and long hours and that kind of thing. And I was thinking for all those out there that are working their arses off seeding right now, maybe we could help.
Yes.
Maybe we could.
Yes. You want to
make seeding
sexy. Ooh. I've got the box drill all ready to go. Let's get out there. There actually is a piece of equipment called a box drill.
Oh.
It kind of writes itself.
That's not deep enough. You don't want it to pop out of there and become exposed. The seeds,
no,
of course.
You need to penetrate to just the right depth.
Why isn't it growing? Is it too cold? Should I do it by hand? Should I rub it a little bit?
That's a heavy piece of seeding equipment you're operating there.
Ooh. Do you like it when I dibble your bulbs? By the way, a dibble, it's a wooden hand tool that they use. A dibble is what it's called. So, yeah.
So
it's used to make holes in the ground to plant the seeds so you can dibble your bulbs.
Part agricultural lesson, too.
This is really good for you. The Beckler and Shauna Podcast. I was catching up with a friend who I haven't talked to in a while, and she has a roommate right now, and I was asking how it's going. And she was like, well, good, but I have a roommate who's a bit clumsy right now. And he's a bit of a faller. And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, he falls a lot.
Is he okay?
So I guess he's a big guy and he's just a bit klutzy. So he is not the best at just operating his own rig. Okay.
And his body.
So my friend gets awoken several times a week right now from this guy, like stubbing his toe or like hitting his head off something. I guess the other day he was trying to put his shoe on and he fell over and he went head first into the wall and left a dent.
Is he sober?
Yes.
It's like he's not stumbling around drunk.
He's just very
clumsy.
Super clumsy and can't. And so she came running out of her bed. She was just like, are you okay? And he was fine. There was a dent at the wall, but he was just like, oh yeah, I like missed when I tried to get my shoe on. You know, I've heard of a whole bunch of roommate issues and things that happen with roommates. This is a new one
a
to me, though. A faller. Like, yeah, he's great, but he's a faller.
We're not getting our damage deposit back. He keeps wrecking everything.
I'm going to have to up rent for you because there's going to be a lot of repairs that are going to need to be done.
You know what, Shauna? I live with a fairly clumsy roommate.
Your
McKenna.
Wife?
Yeah. Yes.
She like,
okay. And it's funny because for someone so athletic, is she clumsy. I mean, part of it is she's got them big feet on her, right? Huge feet.
You say that, but I also have large feet and I manage okay.
She stubs her toe or bangs into something almost once a day.
Okay.
And if I'm nearby when it happens, because you know how mad you get when you do that, then I'm the recipient of that anger.
Yeah.
So if I don't say anything, she'll be like, don't worry, I'm fine.
Yeah, right.
But if I do say something, if I'm like, are you okay? She'll say, no.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's no winning in that situation. Because, like,
and I know that feeling when you hurt yourself, you're so mad.
Oh, yeah. Like with this guy, I was like, you should probably just stay in your room when he hurts himself like that. Just give him a few moments to cool off a little bit. You know what I mean? Like just chill and then go out there. This is almost something you should put on a dating profile, though, as well. You know, like, I like long walks on the beach. A bit of a faller. So if you are a light sleeper, okay, this might not be good.
No kidding. And that's going to, I mean, as he gets older, I hope he figures this out because you don't want to be elderly and also a faller.
It's true.
That's not a good combination.
Like, is there something for that? Can you go to the doctor and be like, do you have a prescription for a faller?
Pads. Prescription pads.
The Beckler and Shauna Podcast. Beckler and Shauna's Career Day.
Just like Career Day in elementary school, we invite people on the show to talk about what they do for work.
After his athletic career ended, our guest today took his love of sports and turned it into a full-time job. We just like to start with your name and just tell us what you do, if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Tyler Hollick. I'm general manager of the Okotoks Dogs Baseball Club. I'm also an associate scout with the Milwaukee Brewers.
So I imagine that you played baseball growing up, yes?
Yeah, I played in North Calgary in Centennial Little League, and when the Dogs moved from Calgary out to Okotoks to start the Okotoks Dogs travel team, I guess it was back then in 2007, I was part of the first class here, and then I was the first part of our first graduating class in 2010 in the academy there, and came back and played on the college summer team here for a couple of years, and I was fortunate enough to be drafted by the San Francisco Giants in 2012 after committing to Ohio State University at a junior college at Chandler Gilbert, and played parts of four seasons in minor league baseball, came back every offseason and coached, and then I got released on spring training 2015 and called John Arcandi, the owner and managing director still, and asked him if I could start coaching and start giving back to baseball that way, and he said yeah. So 8 days later, I started my coaching career and kind of been a great story ever since.
What did you take in college? Like, did you have a backup plan if you couldn't make a career out of baseball?
Yeah, I think I was part of the majority of athletics where I was majoring in eligibility to start and didn't really know what I wanted to do. Everything was kind of part of baseball. My dad kind of has an entrepreneurial background, so I was always interested in the business side of things, but after I was done playing, part of my contract I had school paid for, so I went back and got my degree of business and organizational leadership from Arizona State.
What was that moment like when you got drafted by a Major League Baseball team?
It was cool. Like, it was a really unique situation where 2 years before that, I wasn't really a prospect out of high school. I worked really hard. I was really passionate about learning more about the game and everything, but it was always a goal of mine, but it was something that I never knew if it was going to be possible just with my skill set, but I was actually National Player of the Year in 2012 in junior college in the United States, and had a pretty good idea, but you never know. You get told a bunch of different things in terms of, you know, when you could possibly be drafted or what's the best option for you to go to professional baseball or go to Ohio State. And, I was just kind of balancing everything. But the moment when, you know, your name got called and I was with some friends, and I have pretty close-knit family. I was with most of them. So it was really unique and really fun celebration for sure.
So you were kind of just hoping for that call, and then when you got it, you're like, yeah, there it is.
Yeah. It's definitely it's a wild thing. Because the drafts can be 7-8 hours long. So you're just sitting there waiting. All these kids are called after one after another, and obviously good in their own right. And once you hear yours, it's a really unique experience for sure.
So how close did you get to the majors? You said you played 4 years of minor league ball?
Yeah, I got into A ball. I never got past A ball. So I got released back going into my fourth year of pro ball. That's right. I was a minor league all-star in 2013. I got hurt three different times in 2014, which certainly didn't help. And just couldn't quite recover from that in terms of playing. And yeah, just the numbers came in spring training, and that was about it.
So now you're a GM, a general manager. And how old are you, Tyler?
I'm 31.
So at 31 years old, now you're the GM of this awesome baseball team as well. So what's a typical day look like as a GM?
It's kind of like drinking out of a fire hose, I think, at a lot of times. It's putting out fires in different ways. And I started being GM at 25 years old, which is a huge learning curve and a huge vote of confidence by John, the owner here. And I think kind of having the liberty and the, you know, the latitude to try some things and fail or succeed and see what works and double down on that, or just, you know, really, really try and build something that's best for the program, best for the community, and best for our players is a really neat thing. So, you know, depending on the time of year, I'm involved in, you know, community involvement, sponsorship, ticket sales, just general operations, recruiting. We also run a very elite youth program, nationally recognized as the top youth program in the country. There's 130 players in that from ages 11 all the way up to 18. And, we have 100% graduation rate on that side and over $4 million committed in scholarship money with 12 Division I commits. So it's a really unique opportunity to see from like the grassroots level of like development and bringing these kids in, supplementing, you know, local talent, the top local talent with, you know, some of the best players in the country, having them live together, go to school together, and then develop and move on to college or professional baseball, mixed with, you know, when they play college baseball, they come back and play on our college summer team, and then just kind of the whole sports operation piece, just making sure, you know, the fan experience is right, food and beverage, and just the whole game day experience is unique and a lot of fun for people to partake in. So it's definitely a wide ranging job. There's a lot of different hats that I wear and our team wears, but you know, I take a lot of pride in what we do, and I think we got really good people doing what they're doing. So it's fun for sure, but there can be 12 different things on a day for sure.
So as a 25-year-old general manager, I mean, you're barely older than your players. What is that relationship like? And I imagine maybe you have some insight for anybody else who is in a management position with people who are, you know, perhaps older than them or more experienced than them. How do you handle that?
Yeah, it's a good question. Honestly, like I think they have a saying, you can't fake passion. And I think a lot of people can see that. You kind of do the right things, and it's not dictatorship or led by one person. We're all trying to collaborate and do the best things for the Dogs that we can. And there's a lot of learning. I think, you know, if you're not learning every day, you're coasting. If you're coasting, you're going downhill. So I'm always trying to challenge ourselves. We have some great leaders on staff and with our coaches and with our operations. And John Arcandi has been a really good mentor to me of just learning how, you know, things should operate and how he expects them to operate. And it was just, yeah, it was definitely a learning curve, but it's been a lot of fun to partake in it.
What's the one of the coolest experiences you've had in your line of work?
Whew. That's a tough question. You know, there's some cool stories. I mean, there's obviously some stuff I probably can't share on the air as part of the clubhouse stuff and stuff like that. But when I was at the Giants, we got taken to Oracle Park, and it was AT&T at the time. And the top 25 draft prospects that year had a full week of workouts. And, you know, just to hear from some of they're really big on legacy and some of their baseball greats of all time, Willie Mays, Orlando Cepeda, guys like that would come back, and Will Clark, Sean Dunston, these guys would come back and talk to us just as the next young guys coming up and just share their stories and to hear, you know, some of the greatest players to ever play the game was really unique. And then I guess just the you know, there's so many things that go on here with the Dogs day to day that is really unique. And like I said, it's like drinking out of a fire hose sometimes, where you get to kind of partake in seven or eight different avenues of the business. But I'd say that probably the biggest thing for me is just the relationships that I've been able to foster. Since I started this, you meet so many, you know, really cool people and passionate about the program and the community. And it's a lot of fun for sure.
We're chatting with Tyler Holick, who is the general manager of the Okotoks Dogs and also a scout for the Milwaukee Brewers. So that title, what does that look like? Like, what does your season look like as a scout? Are you traveling lots? Where are you going to watch ball players? How often are you in contact with the Brewers? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So I'm an associate scout. So basically anybody that I see that I think is a, you know, professional prospect or shows professional tools anyway, I pass along to my, you know, my supervisor with the boss or with the Brewers. He's the Pacific Northwest scout and covers Canada and Hawaii and a bunch of different things. So it helps having eyes, you know, everywhere type of thing. But we recruit nationally for the academy here, and you know, I'm going to the top showcase tournaments around the country and kind of keep my ear close to the ground. So you know, it kind of works hand in hand with what I'm doing. There's nothing additional that I have to do in terms of like a Brewer's responsibility. So if I see somebody that might fit the academy, but also might fit in professional baseball, it's a simple report and physical traits, physical tools, present ability, stuff like that. Just kind of give the information to my boss with the Brewers, and they can take it from there.
I was going to say, like, what do you look for in a prospect? Because I imagine when you're looking at these players and you're looking for potential mainly. So what are the main tools that you look for to see what a potential player could look like?
It's a good question. There's a ton of things, honestly. The five major tools in baseball is throwing, running, fielding, hitting, and hitting for power. So it is tough to evaluate a high school bat just because they're facing obviously typically lesser pitching than they would in high-end Division I or professional baseball. But, you know, players that really stand out, physical traits, so kind of what your eye sees. The players in professional sports and professional baseball in particular are big. There has to be a lot of future projection there. So it's not just evaluating necessarily the best high school players right now or the guy with the best stats. It's who has the physical ability combined with the makeup and some of those intangibles or those, you know, non-teachable traits that could project in, you know, 4 or 5 years to be a major league caliber player. So it's in Canada, it's fewer and far between, and obviously in like the south of Florida. So they stand out pretty easily at times. But the cool thing about baseball, it's such a late developing game. So you don't have to be a 15-year-old superstar to be a to be a professional baseball prospect at some point in your career. And then it's really nice to note when players, you know, are developing from 15 to 17 to 19 to 21, stuff like that. So, you know, it's just not crossing anybody off the list and taking notes on everybody and just kind of see how they develop through their career. But there's a ton of different ways to get noticed by a professional team. It's just, it's a really outlier thing where you really have to stand out in one way or another, physically or in-game play or whatever it is. So
when I hear you describe this, I'm wondering if you're ever able to just sit and enjoy a baseball game like we are, or are you looking at it through the eyes of a scout and a GM?
More like a coach. I've been in baseball my whole life, so I've been lucky enough to have two employers my whole life, San Francisco Giants and the Okotoks Dogs. So I love coaching, and I love the player development side and kind of that relationships piece, building up a player individually. So I'm the biggest baseball fan I know, for sure. I can kind of watch it through a couple different lenses, and I think baseball, it's such a failure sport. It's really easy to sit back and nitpick. Well, he should have done this. Well, he should have done that. Each piece of action in the game happens slowly. It's a slow developing game, but in the middle of the play, it happens really fast. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And I think it's, you know, through my experience, I've probably failed more than anybody too in on the baseball field. So I think it's easy for me to kind of understand, you know, when things don't go wrong and there's an error made or a strikeout or whatever it is, kind of, you know, how that happens. But it's fun. There's so many little intricacies and little rules and, you know, the game within the game that is so much fun to enjoy. And it's really unique watching it from, you know, the high school level, the elite high school level, up to college, up to professional baseball. It's been a fun ride. So,
as a baseball insider, what do you think of some of the new rule changes or the things they're trying to do to speed up the game? Do you agree with all that? Or
I do. I view myself as a baseball traditionalist in a lot of ways, but in my opinion, and this is kind of what the idea was behind Major League Baseball's new rules or new initiatives, was it was supposed to take it back to the original intent of the game. There's supposed to be a pace to it or a cadence to it. I mean, it just became too much where, you know, pitchers are taking 20, 30 seconds around the mound to catch their breath because the output in terms of a pitch, you know, the average velocity of a fastball is almost 95 miles an hour. And 20 years ago, it used to be, you know, 89.2 type of thing. So in order for these players to be energized and fresh and all these things as they deliver the pitch, they need to take more and more time. And I think it was just decreasing contact rate. There was less action in the game. And then it drug on for three and a half, four hours. I just think, you know, players from first to third or stealing second base or, you know, double plays, just it brought the athleticism back in the game. It brought the pace back in the game. And honestly, there's so many numbers and analytics, even at our level, never mind the major league level, which is a million times more, where, you know, they had such advanced scouting reports. They could basically, you know, they were telling guys where to stand because that's, you know, there's a 70% chance they were going to hit it there if they put it in play. It kind of took out some of the guesswork or that game within the game and kind of watching it and having a feel for it. So limiting the guys on two guys to each side of the field, the pitch clock, the limit on pickoffs. I think they've worked out as well as they could have hoped. And I think it's a way more entertaining product and brings a lot of the athletes back and the versatility and the exciting plays. So I'm all about it. I think they're great. I'm excited to see what the next generation looks like, for sure. The evolution of the athlete is crazy in every sport. I think everybody's seen that in hockey and basketball and football and certainly baseball. The average velocity has, you know, gone up almost 4 miles an hour and, you know, even higher in relievers. And there's more strain on the athletes and, you know, more of a strict development plan when these kids are 10, 11, 15 years old to really train to that level and just to be able to compete. And for us to be able to, you know, watch that, and it's pretty special. So
what you said at the end there kind of ties into my next question for you. My son is 9. He loves baseball. His goal is to play in college one day. What advice do you give to young ball players who are hoping to take it as far as they can?
You know, there's a lot of things. I mean, I think the thing is, don't be in a hurry. I mean, I think it's really easy to look at an advanced 9-year-old or a 12-year-old or 15-year-old or whatever it is and start projecting these kids out. I think when you can really maximize their passion for the game and teach the kids the right way to play the game, the right way to associate with their teammates and run on the field and really enjoy the things that the game gives you, as you get older and start to understand and get physically stronger and start to develop, you know, real physical tools to play, you know, potentially at the high-end high school level or college level or whatever it is. I think when you combine the physical traits with the passion and the education for the game, as they get older, it becomes like a really special thing. And it is really a battle of attrition. I mean, even college baseball, you play 30 games in the fall. It's 6 a.m. workouts, it's class, and then it's a 3-hour practice and study hall and all these different things all the way through the spring where you're going to play a 56-game schedule. in the summer ball, which is, you know, another 56, 60 games. And if you want to play pro ball, you're playing 142 games and 151 nights in the minor leagues. And it's a long time to play. So one, you better really, really love it. And two, you just can't be in a hurry. So if you can, you know, learn to love it and learn to deal with the failure, I think that's a massive thing, because it's really about managing. You know, if you're 3 for 10 in professional baseball, you're hitting 300. You're on track to be a Hall of Famer. And you know, major league average is almost 250 now. So, you know, you're way ahead of the curve there. But you know, you tell a 9-year-old kid that you're going to go out and play a sport and you're going to fail, you know, 7 out of 10 times, 6 out of 10 times, and you're at the highest level. It's tough for them to grasp sometimes. So, you know, understanding the positives and really having them enjoy the game and not worried about, you know, their stats or their numbers or anything like that is a big thing. He's, you know, 9 years old, is obviously still so young, but just have him enjoy it and have fun with his teammates and hopefully make it a lifelong passion.
My boyfriend's nephew, Peyton McHarg, is in Div 2 right now in the States, and he's going to be playing with the Saskatoon Berries right away. So he's pretty excited for that too. Yeah. Do you have any advice for him coming in your league?
It's a good league. Guys can pitch. There's a lot of high-end college players here and, you know, some future major league prospects. So I encourage anybody that's a big baseball fan to come out and watch it. But I think he'll be in a great situation there in Saskatoon. We're really excited to have them back in the league. And, you know, I think he'll be a great fit for him. So that's excellent.
Before we let you go, we got to give you a chance to plug the Dogs in your upcoming season.
Awesome. Opening night is Friday, May 24th. First pitch at 7:05. We play the next night on Saturday, May 25th. We're doing the banner unveiling that night, and it'll be a lot of fun. We're back-to-back champions. We won the year before COVID, so it's kind of a quasi-threepeat. But we're really excited about the year and some really fun promotions. So if anyone wants tickets, they can go to dogsbaseball.ca, dawgsbaseball.ca, or any of our social accounts on X, Instagram, TikTok, or Facebook. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Great beer and great friends, and it's a really fun time at the ballpark for anybody that's looking for a cheap date night or family night out. So,
and our very own Sam from X here is going to be throwing out the first pitch on Saturday, so that's pretty cool. Right. I think there's like 40 of us probably coming from the station for that. So,
yeah, we haven't figured out the details of that. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
That's going
to
be awesome.
It's going to be a good time.
Hopefully you get tackled well.
Tyler Holick is the general manager of the Okotoks Dogs and an associate scout for the Milwaukee Brewers. Thank you for talking baseball with us this morning.
Thanks so much, Tyler.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
You've been listening to the Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
You want more? Then tune in to X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna live on Calgary's Alternative, X92.9. Monday through Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time at x92.9.ca. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and have Beckler and Shauna downloaded daily to whatever device you use. Later.
After Hours with Mariah and Ty, a weekly podcast that brings this dynamic duo to another level of awesome and allows you to listen on your own terms. Go behind the curtain and hear the stuff you won't hear on the radio. Like, they're going to say,
find After Hours with Mariah and Ty wherever you get your podcasts.